The date is March 23rd, 1984, and we're watching Police Academy. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello, and welcome to I Used to Like This One. This is the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. I am your host, Sean Wells, and with me is my co-host...
Hello, I'm Colin Stewart.
So, this week we're looking back at March 1984, when the movies and theaters were Splash, Children of the Corn, Against All Odds, Romancing the Stone, and of course, our movie for today, Police Academy, which earned $81.1 million on a $4.5 million budget.
And just a warning, as always, to everyone out there listening, this movie was made in 1984, so it is very old. There will be spoilers, so if you don't want the movie to be spoiled for you, please press pause, go have a watch, and then come back and listen to what we have to say.
Alrighty, the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, "Want to be a law enforcement officer? All you have to do is join the farce." Well, that's a solid pun, but definitely not the best description, so let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis!
Alright. An unnamed city experiences a surge in criminal activity and a shortage of police officers to enforce the law, forcing the mayor to require the police department to accept all willing recruits regardless of gender, body weight, skin color, age. When Kerry Mahoney lands himself in some hot water, he cuts a deal to join said police force with the intention to get thrown out. The only problem is, the chief of police refuses to allow anyone to be thrown out. He wants all his substandard recruits to quit, and he's brought in Lieutenant Harris to make their lives hell.
You know, I think you could have probably summed it up with, this movie is about people learning to be cops in a series of montages. And there's lots of pranks, too. Like, that's kind of all this movie is. For me, the movie, my memory of this movie is a little vague, because when I was old enough to actually watch Police Academy, the first four had already been released at that point. So I kind of, much like Short Circuit, jumble up which ones are from, or which scenes are from which movie, and all that sort of thing. What about you, Colin? Before today, what was your experience with Police Academy?
All right, so this one's actually kind of interesting for me because I've never seen Police Academy, or I hadn't seen it until I watched it this week.
Okay.
But I worked a long time in security. I was a security guard for about 8 years or so, and anybody who works security has worked with a Tackleberry.
Really? Yeah. I wouldn't have thought that was a common name.
No, it's not a common name.
Oh, Tackleberry. Yeah,
it's not
okay,
a common name. Okay. It's not a common actual name for a person, but it's a common nickname for a specific type of person that you'll work for basically in any area of law enforcement. And so it was really fun to watch this movie and
see
where the name originated, see Tackleberry in all his glory, and all of a sudden 8 years of security work completely made sense.
Okay, well, let's jump into Police Academy. It's directed by Hugh Wilson, who would go on to direct movies like Guarding Tess, First Wives Club, Mickey, Blast from the Past, Dudley Do-Right, and most impressively, he was a creator of WKRP, where he would sometimes be a writer as well under the pseudonym Raoul Plager. For some reason,
interesting pseudonym.
Yeah, I don't understand the pseudonym, but apparently the reason for this was he thought that being a television writer was beneath him, so that's why he wrote under a pseudonym. It's produced by Paul Mazalansky, who his IMDb is all Police Academy stuff, including the series, which I didn't know existed, and a cartoon, which I also didn't know existed.
Wow.
He also did things like Ski School, Return to Oz, Cop and a Half. And it's written by Neil Israel, who is also involved in all the Police Academy movies, Real Genius, Bachelor Party, Look Who's Talking, and Pat Proft, who is a writer on so many spoof movies and franchises, like all the Naked Guns, all the Scary Movies, both Hot Shots, High School High, the John Lovitz Dangerous Minds spoof, Wrongfully Accused, which is the Leslie Nielsen Fugitive spoof. So we open the movie, and the first thing you have to do is read the backstory on the screen superimposed over a shot of the city skyline. Basic summary is the city needs cops and decides to relax the requirements by letting anyone apply to be a cop. We are then introduced to some of our characters in brief scenes. First, in an office building where we get to meet the night security guard, Eugene Tackleberry. So as Colin said in the beginning, this is the guy right here. Played by David Graff, who reprises the role in all six sequels and an episode of the TV show. And he did voice work on Star Trek video games. But his most interesting credit is he played Tom Arnold in one of those unauthorized biography movies, the Roseanne, the unauthorized biography. And so Tackleberry is someone who is always suspicious and has an itchy trigger finger. He hears a noise in a room and busts in, guns ablazing, just to find out it was a goodbye party for him because he's joining the police. Next, we're at a parking lot where the attendant is Kerry Mahoney, the great Steve Guttenberg, who we got to meet in our Short Circuit episode, and was also in Cocoon 1 and 2, Three Men and a Baby, Three Men and a Little Lady. Lately, I've seen him cashing in on his nostalgic fame in the 80s set show The Goldbergs. He's one of the teachers in Adam Goldberg's high school. So,
oh yeah,
they like doing a they like doing a lot of these things where they get in these stars from old movies and old TV shows. Yeah, it's absolutely full of nostalgia in that show if you know who to look for. And Mahoney is busy telling an uppity customer that the lot is full and insulting him by pointing out, wig, wig alert, wig alert, when the manager comes by. So he insists Mahoney find a spot for the guy's car. So Mahoney takes the guy's car, pops it up on two wheels, and slides it into a narrow gap between two other cars. I love the introduction to Mahoney. Mahoney, you know, we talked about him a bit in Short Circuit, where they were worried about him being too cool for the character in Short Circuit. And, I mean, this is where we get to see...
Watching this movie, you can see why. Like, he's not the guy you would pick to then be play this nerdy scientist.
No, absolutely not. Especially if you were to take a look at the cast as a whole. There are several people in this movie alone that could have just been a much better nerdy person in Short Circuit. So, next we meet Leslie Barbara, who is played by Donovan Scott, who was Castor Oil in Popeye. He was in Back to the Future 3. Since, I love this fun fact that I found out. Since 1997, he has played Santa Claus in 15 different movies or TV shows. And in one movie, he was a character called Mr. Winter. So that's close enough to me to be a 16th. But yeah, he has played Santa Claus 15 times. You need a Santa? He's the guy you go to, this guy from Police Academy. Leslie works in a photo kiosk in the middle of a parking lot. And what a couple of shitty jobs we've seen so far in this movie. Parking attendant and camera kiosk. And even funnier is, I don't really think that either of these roles even exist anymore.
No, they're both done by computers.
Yeah, like parking attendant, okay, I guess if you go to a valet restaurant.
Yeah, like a special event or something like that.
Yeah, but I don't think you have these guys that live in these booths as much anymore.
Even photo kiosks, the only place I ever see them is Walmart.
Pretty much, yeah. For developing photos, I don't even know where else you would go. And anyway, his kiosk is shaped like a Kodak camera, which means... Here comes Sponsorship Corner! So as usual, I love finding product placements in movies. There aren't a whole lot in Police Academy, but there are a few, so here we go. Police Academy is brought to you by Kodak, MasterCard, Pontiac Trans Am, Honda, Pepsi, Wilson Tennis Rackets, St. Louis Cardinals, Miller Lite Beer, Sonata Jukeboxes, Life Magazine, Sony Electronics, and Teske Concrete. And an argument might be made that McDonald's also got their name in there, but it's not obvious. A restaurant can be seen for a split second in the background in a riot scene, and also on an out-of-focus billboard for a couple other seconds. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
That has to be the shortest one in recent memory.
Yeah, well, not except for Mortal Kombat, yeah. With the one sponsor in that one. So Leslie is clearly a guy who gets pushed around because some hooligans he knows come and load his kiosk onto a truck and throw him off a bridge. He vows to get revenge, screaming at them from the river below that he's going to become a cop.
Is it just me? Like, when I watch that scene, that seems like it's a regular occurrence. You know, like, it seems like this isn't the first time it's happened.
Yeah, I either with his work or just in general, like...
You think they would have, like, pegged that kiosk down a little bit better.
These are the Mahoneys in his life before he actually meets Mahoney.
Yeah.
So we follow Mahoney entering the police station because he's been arrested, and he meets Larvell Jones, or as he introduces himself, Dr. Monsignor Larvell Jones, MD, who is played by Michael Winslow, who was in all the police academies, Spaceballs, does voice work, obviously, and he was in Sharknado 3 and Lavalantula, which was my favorite film title that I came across. It's like,
what's the premise?
It's a spider that is immune to lava or something. It's a cheesy.
I was hoping it was going to be a spider that was made out of lava.
Well, see, I don't know. I didn't look too much into Lavalantula, even though two of the stars of this movie are in it. But yeah, Larvell Jones has been arrested for making sound effects, essentially, I guess. Mahoney is brought in to see Captain Reed, who is played by Ted Ross. He was the Lion in The Wiz. He was in Arthur 1 and 2, the musical movie Ragtime. His last credit was The Fisher King, where he played, quote, black lawyer. He tells Mahoney that he has to join the police academy or get charged, but man, is he rocking that mustache.
Oh, yeah.
That is the mustache right there. He does all other famous mustaches to shame. Like, I'm sorry, Tom Selleck in the 80s. You've got nothing on Ted Ross's mustache in this movie. So he tells Mahoney that he has to join the police academy or get charged, and that he won't be allowed to quit. He says, on one condition, he'll commit to these terms, and it's that he gets to bring his personal physician, Dr. Larvell Jones. So somehow Jones manages to get pulled into being a police officer. So next we meet Doug Fackler, who is played by Bruce Mahler, who has 17 credits, 5 of which are, quote, uncredited. Nothing since 2000. He was a regular on the show Fridays. His wife is trying to stop him from leaving. We find out very fast that he's a klutz. His wife chases his car down and is jumping on the hood. And next we see Karen Thompson, who is a very young Kim Cattrall, who was in the movie Crossroads with Britney Spears. But really, everyone probably knows her as Samantha from Sex and the City. Even if you don't watch Sex and the City, everyone probably knows the saying of, I'm a Samantha, or I'm a Charlotte. And she is riding to the academy in a limo, and obviously her parents don't approve of her becoming a cop, because she's arguing with her mom, played by Joyce Gordon, who was the lunch lady in Billy Madison, as they drive down the freeway. And we see Doug Fackler again with his wife on the hood, driving next to them. We are now on Police Academy campus and seeing people arriving and getting glimpses of more of the ragtag, very 80s clad people wanting to become cops. People like Kyle Blanks, who is played by Brent Von Hoffman, who has 26 credits. He was in Police Academy 1 and 3, and his last credit is Arrested Development for one episode in 2004. His IMDb pick is this movie. Chad Copeland is another one of the cops we see, played by Scott Thompson, not Kids in the Hall Scott Thompson. He has 44 credits, Twister, Fast Times at Ridgemont High, and ladies' man, George Martin, who is played by Andrew Rubin, who has 28 credits. Serpico was one of them. I enjoyed the banter between Mahoney and George here, where George pulls up in the car full of girls, mm-hmm. and and finds out that all the girls in the car were George's girlfriends, and he says, "You're an interesting guy." And then Martin finds out that Mahoney just joined the police academy to get kicked out, and says, "You're a pretty interesting guy yourself." It's, you know, the introduction there, and I love how Mahoney just decides to befriend him because obviously this guy knows how to get the ladies.
Yeah, Mahoney's just a horn dog.
So Police Chief Hernst is not impressed with what he sees. In a meeting with Commandant Eric Lessard, who is played by George Gaines, who was born in Helsinki, I found out. He was in Tootsie. He was Henry on Punky Brewster. His first credit is in 1955 in a movie called One Touch of Venus. He's kind of an interesting guy. He was a singer, and he fought in World War II in the Netherlands Navy. He also directed the series finale of WKRP, saying when he was a cadet, everyone was the right weight, the right height, the right color, and they all had Johnsons. Yikes! So, like, already, this 1984 movie is kind of laying out what we're going to be hearing a lot more of in this movie. All of a sudden, yeah, we're already talking about sexism and fat shaming and racism and...
But, I mean, to its credit, that's the point of the movie. Is that now everybody's going to be accepted in, so...
Yeah, and compared to a lot of the other movies that we've watched, I guess Con Air aside, we've run into a lot of lack of diversity in the movies. And so Police Academy is going somewhere that most 1984 films aren't going. I mean, with Con Air, yeah, there's diversity, but of course they're all criminals.
Yeah.
but in this, it's like, okay, you've got good guys and they've got women, they've got black people, they've got white people. Not a lot outside of that. It's Police Academy 2 that has Asian people show up.
And I mean, Hightower ultimately becomes like the hero of the movie altogether, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, very much so. And also we have the line, "And have you seen what our new Lady Mayor has brought us?" So that's how the chief refers to the mayor of the city. The chief is angry and he wants them to try and force people to quit. Lieutenant Harris, of course, kisses ass and agrees, and he's played by G.W. Bailey, who we talked about in our Short Circuit episode a little bit. He has 108 credits, several of which are Police Academy related, and is now currently in a show called Major Crimes. Harris now goes down to inspect the cadets. They are supposed to line up an arm's width apart. We hear our second racist line of the movie from Kyle Blanks, who says, "There sure are a lot of spades around here." And at which point his shoulder is touched by his neighbor in line, checking the arm distance, and that's Moses Hightower with a look of murder on his face for Blanks, who tries to backpedal with, "Which is a good thing." And Hightower is played by Bubba Smith, who is a defensive end and defensive tackle in the NFL, playing for the Baltimore Colts between 1967 and 71, winning a Super Bowl with them in 1971. Also playing for the Oakland Raiders from 73 to 74 and the Houston Oilers from 75 to 76. His first two credits are The Odd Couple, where he played himself, and Wonder Woman. In fact, he has played himself 5 times in his film career, plus a movie called Blue Thunder, where he played a character called Lyman Bubba Kelsey. So maybe give him a credit there too. And his last screen credit, which was released 5 years after his death, is by far the strangest. It's a movie called Daze. So D-A-Z, or Z for our American listeners, E. But the Z is capitalized. So it's Daze, colon, volume 2. But 2 is spelled T-O-O. And then we've got, in brackets, we've got S-I-C, so set in context, dash, nonsense. But some of the letters there are also capitalized. Like, this is the most bizarre title, and this movie came out after his death, and he plays a character called Bubba in that movie. But I don't know whether it's supposed to be him. Okay, so here's a segment. I want to talk about this movie for a minute. Okay, so this is the most batshit looking movie that I've ever seen.
Lay it on me.
believe me, I've known to like weird shit like the movie Brazil, but this one looks absolutely bonkers. So here's the official description from IMDb. It's a postmodern avant-garde dramedy musical, non-musical, told non-linearly. That's the synopsis.
That's a lot of counterpoints in yes. the synopsis.
So this movie, it stars Gary Busey. So that right there should tell you just how off the fucking deep end this movie is going to be. It has, as I mentioned, Bubba Smith playing a character named Bubba. And it's his last credited movie. And it's credited on IMDb as released in 2016. So remember that for a second. But because that may not also be true. It is also, interestingly, Andrew Koenig's last screen credit as well. And Andrew Koenig is not from Police Academy, but he is someone probably best known as playing Boner from Growing Pains. Or he's the son of Chekhov from Star Trek, Walter Koenig. And he committed suicide in Vancouver in 2010. 6 years prior to this movie's release. Okay, still with me?
Yeah.
It also has Marion Ramsey, who plays Hooks, as a character named Miss Thendosa Norbottle, which is why I think Bubba might not be playing Bubba Smith. Okay, and it stars Leslie Easterbrook, who is Callahan, playing Countess Salience Van Wickenstein. Now, as I mentioned, there's a little weirdness with this release date. It's the most bonkers research I've ever done on a movie, and it's not even the one we're actually doing. But first of all, I tried finding a copy of this movie by legal and illegal means. It doesn't seem to exist anywhere. The best I could find was the trailer, and I'll post this trailer on our social media. So I used to like this one with numbers instead of letters on Twitter. So on YouTube there is a behind the scenes documentary and the trailer for this movie. Now, so some sources credit this movie as having a 2012 release date. Some say 2016. Some even say it was filming in 2008, which would make sense because of Andrew Koenig's death and Bubba Smith's death. However, none of these sources are actually from daysthemovie.com. Which doesn't seem to have the best information about this movie. Like, it's nowhere does it list where I can find this movie for purchase. The best I can assume is that it's an independent film, very possibly a student film or a GoFundMe film, and it doesn't seem to exist anywhere. Like, I need to know more about this movie. So if someone has a copy of this movie, knows where to get a copy, send us an email or send us a tweet, do something, because I need to know about this movie. It even looks, just watching the behind the scenes stuff, like some of it was filmed in front of green screen and some of it does really weird visual things, like, you know, the Keanu Reeves movie, A Scanner Darkly, mm-hmm. where they're kind of cartoon. Like, there's some scenes that are like that. From what I read, it's divided into, like, three different segments. Like, greed and love and something else. And each of them is assigned its own color as well. So Gary Busey is part of the greed section. And so all the stuff in that section is kind of green. Oh, death is the other one. Love is all red. Death is, I don't even remember what color death was. But, oh my god, watch this trailer and you will walk away going, what the fuck is that? And so that is Days, Volume 2, Set in Context, Nonsense. Wow.
Sorry, I was just distracted looking at the Days Volume 2 Facebook page.
the Facebook page. Oh, Facebook page. Yeah, it doesn't look like there's much activity on that. The website itself.
It's just like posting Gary Busey pictures and various like pop culture articles and.
And when you go to the official website for the movie as well, it looks like it was something that was created in, you know, 1998 when the internet still looked MySpace-like. It's bad. So we end up meeting Laverne Hooks, who is played by Marion Ramsey. She was in all the Police Academy movies except the last one. And Bubba Smith was actually asked to be in the last movie. And out of protest, out of the fact that Marion Ramsey wasn't offered a part, he ended up saying, no, I'm not going to do it if you're not going to give Hooks a part. She was also in Days, as I mentioned. And she is the other one that was in Lavalantula, like Michael Winslow. But unlike him, she returned for the sequel, which was... which is called, I don't know if I can get through this, which is called Two Lava, Two Lantula, much like the Fast and the Furious sequel. Two Lava, Two Lantula. Nice. And she wants to be a police officer, and she tells Lieutenant Harris, but very quietly, which we find out is Hooks' thing. Mahoney tells George it's time to get thrown out, so he sexually harasses Karen Thompson by pretending to be important and getting her phone number and asking to see her thighs, and he gets busted by Lieutenant Harris. Then Commandant Lessard is addressing the recruits. I enjoy how every time he says how long the program is in this movie, he says a different amount of time.
because he thinks
it's 8 weeks or something, or no, it's 14 weeks I think is how long this course is, and he has to get prompted by Lieutenant Harris.
Yeah,
so he says 14 the first time, and then 16 the second time, and then 12 later on. Barbara's dog starts humping Lassard's leg, and Barbara says, stop it, princess. And Lassard says, princess, more like a prince. And then from Lieutenant Harris, we get our first homophobic line of the movie, but not the last, where he says, he's a queer! Yeah, they double down on that joke later, and there's also another one that I found. And, of course, there's the whole Blue Oyster. As a straight man, I don't even know whether I can speak about how wrong the Blue Oyster is, or whether it is wrong or not, but... Now... All the check-in stuff is happening. People getting uniforms. Tackleberry wondering when they get guns. Lieutenant Harris sends George Martin and Blanks, which he calls Ratface, which is kind of accurate, and Copeland to get haircuts. Martin is in the chair, but Blanks and Copeland come in, and they're belligerent assholes, so Martin gives up his spot, and they tell the barber to shave it all off. And then Martin gets in the chair and asks for a little off the sides. And they say, you can do that? And so we get prank one is the fact that George Martin let them get their heads shaved. You know, yeah, we can do that. It's not the army. Mahoney, meanwhile, has pranked Barbara by sending him into the Commandant's home to looking for uniforms, where he encounters the Commandant's wife coming out of the shower. And now they get their room assignments. We meet the characters again briefly in odd couple pairings. Martin asking Fackler if he and his wife do a doggy style. Was this risque in the 80s? Like, this is the guy that had all the women. Why is the dirtiest thing that he came up with doggy style?
I don't know. I don't know what the sexual adventures of people in the 80s are like.
I would have thought with the sexual revolution of the 60s and the 70s, you know, I would have thought that the 80s wouldn't be so conservative, but doing it doggy style is...
I mean, even, like, especially for that, well, I mean, that might just be, like, part of the thing with that movie. Like, I wouldn't think... This movie is obviously, like, not the tamest movie around.
No, so, obviously not, yeah.
But it's just the character, I guess.
So we see Tackleberry unpacking all his guns in front of Mahoney as well. Everyone is now suited up in sweatsuits, and Mahoney aggressively flirts with Thompson, and they're all getting initiated by Captain Harris, saying that they are the D Squad, which stands for Dirtbags. And he and Sergeant Callahan are the meanest ones there. That's why they got the D Squad. I haven't introduced Callahan yet, because we're now nearly half an hour into the movie, and she has yet to have a line. So she that won't come until the hand-to-hand combat scene. But she's played by Leslie Easterbrook. She was in all of the Police Academy films. She was in Laverne and Shirley. She was in 51 episodes of Laverne and Shirley. So I don't know my Laverne and Shirley. So that must be why she is in this movie. She was in Ryan's Hope for 23 episodes. And, of course, that Days movie. And most recently, a movie called Beast Mode that came out just a couple months ago on September 30th. They end up taking the cadets for a run. And he's tuckering them out. Except for Jones, who is pretending to play video games. And I'll say it now, his mime and sound effects are more believable than video game playing in The Wizard and The Last Starfighter combined. Michael Winslow knows how to play a video game. He's got believable video games, and he's miming it.
So I actually didn't believe, I think, until you told me that those were actually him making those sounds.
Yeah,
they're so good that I thought they were just playing like a switchboard.
Yeah, and that's his thing. Like, if you've ever seen his stand-up comedy, well, obviously I guess you haven't, but I remember when I was a kid I went on a stand-up comedy kick, and that's where I discovered people like George Carlin and Eddie Murphy Raw and Richard Pryor. I was watching all those, and I remember finding a videotape of Michael Winslow's comedy, and yeah, that's what he does, impressions and sound effects. That's
crazy.
So then we're in a classroom with Lieutenant Harris, and I love him writing on the chalkboard here, where it's the police work is what you, with the letter U, R, letter R, here for, with the letter 4, and then he's explaining all his stuff where he ends up, like, circling things and all these abbreviations that don't make sense. It's just, it is a funny sight gag. And Mahoney is upset because he still can't get kicked out, even though he's sassing Lieutenant Harris, and he figures he needs to talk to the Commandant. So Jones's superpower to the rescue, and he makes a speaker announcement to get him out of class. But did you notice throughout the movie that any time in the background there was a speaker announcement, it sounded like Michael Winslow doing the announcements? Okay.
Well, that comes in later when they're getting called for the SWAT thing.
Oh, yeah, because, like, they said, was that you? Was that you? Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, he makes a pretend speaker announcement to get Mahoney out of class, telling him to report to the Commandant's office. He also makes a fake announcement to get rid of Lieutenant Harris, which I love. You know, let's get Callahan in charge of this class instead of him, because he's obviously an idiot. So Mahoney barges in on the Commandant in a who's on first type scene. Mahoney ends up realizing he's trapped, because it's very much, who are you? I'm Mahoney. Yeah, okay, well, you know, I want to get kicked out. Well, why don't you just quit? Well, I can't quit. So it's very, you know, who's on first, who's on second.
Yeah.
But Colin, I think it's time for a little show and tell. What do you think?
Sure. I mean, I don't have anything to share, but you mentioned that you have something absolutely mind-blowing.
I do. I'm
super excited to hear
about. Okay, well, so you mentioned you found a couple things. So, I mean, I found the usual Hollywood memorabilia, yeah, and stuff like that. You said that you actually found it. So do you have any, like, actual examples of...
I found the most interesting thing I found was on, I think it was, like, HollywoodMemorabilia.com. They have, like, a complete... signed cast photo that will run you about $800.
Yeah, and I think I saw that one too, and I think it's actually for, like, Police Academy 2 even.
Yeah.
So it doesn't even have everyone from this movie.
And then there's obviously, like, there was quite a bit of, like, Bubba Smith autographs, yeah, and merchandise, yeah, and that kind of stuff, which was all hovering around the, like, $50 to $80 range and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and as usual, I also found a bunch of stuff on Redbubble.com. Come on, Redbubble, sponsor us, where you can find Police Academy t-shirts and stuff. Okay, here's the most exciting thing that I found. So, in Madrid, Spain, there is the Police Academy stunt show, or Loca... I don't speak Spanish. Loca Academia de Policia. Okay. And it's a slapstick comedy stunt show that is located at Park. That's also a Spanish word. Parque? I'm assuming it means park. Warner Madrid. So, formerly, the show was also at the Warner Brothers Movie World, Six Flags Magic Mountain, and Warner Brothers Movie World in Germany. So it left Germany in 2004, and since then has been at the Warner Brothers Park in Madrid. And so I'll post a link to this one as well, because someone filmed it. But have you ever been to Universal Studios?
No.
No? Okay. But you are aware of the stunt shows that they do at Universal Studios, I'm sure. Like in Universal Studios, California, it's Indiana Jones.
Okay.
And so it's this show that you come out and you're in the bleachers and they perform a scene from the movie or something like that. But yeah, they perform the stunts live for you.
Okay.
You know, and real explosions and stuff like that. And so watching the video for this, it's that, but the whole storyline involves Police Academy characters or like a Police Academy situation. You know, there's one part where someone gets run up the flagpole
because
the flag catches in their pants. There's a lot of cars speeding on this track. Like it's a very cool thing. But like at the other Universal Studios to have things like Indiana Jones, I was at Universal Studios in Japan where they had a music show which was a Beetlejuice music show. Like to have those, makes sense.
So is this like an officially licensed Police Academy?
It is an official, like the costumes are Police Academy. I'm just thinking, yeah.
I remember when I went to Mexico on my honeymoon and you know, like they have the entertainment resort and it's kind of like loosely based.
You clearly don't have the rights to this. Yeah. No, this is like an official Warner Brothers sanctioned Police Academy stunt show. And
is Police Academy really popular in Spain?
That's what I'm wondering. Yeah, is this like Jerry Lewis is to France or like David Hasselhoff is to Germany? Like, is this, you know, Police Academy has this major cult following in Spain. And so, but I mean, this show was also in Germany and I forgot to write down where Warner Brothers Movie World and Six Flags Magic Mountain are. Those might be American. But yeah, just this obscure show. And so that was the favorite thing that I found. So that's Show and Tell.
Nice. That's a good one.
So we get our first montage, which I like to call the We Suck Obstacle Course montage. It ends up with Mahoney pulling another prank by getting brown shoe polish from the supply room to put on the mouth of Harris's megaphone. And this gets Mahoney in trouble where the squad leaders who Harris picked, so of course they're Blanks and Copeland, the two racists, are going to run him until he pukes. We also see that Martin is sneaking into the woman's dorm with the worst disguise ever. Like, why does he even bother? We get a gun range where, disappointed by the size of the issued firearm, Tackleberry uses his own hand cannon.
Got from his mom.
Yeah. Yeah. Can I see that, Tackleberry? Can I borrow that? Next is the hand-to-hand combat where Callahan is teaching. So finally, Leslie Easterbrook gets to speak. She's teaching judo, and she pins Barbara to the mat with her crotch right in his face, says, "Who's next?" And of course, all the guys raise their hands and, me. And I like with Mahoney where he's like, we can go together. So now we get a crane shot of the woman's dorm, panning across all the different dorm rooms, showing Callahan working out in her bra, and George Martin with two girls, and a couple of women changing because you need some tits and ass, and then doubling down with some women in a ground floor shower with Mahoney casually watching, drinking a beer. Harris catches him, sends him away, and then gets caught peeking by the women.
I'm sorry, but... Like, Me Too moment of 1984. How
do you have a ground floor shower?
Well, that, and, like, why? Like, I'm just thinking of the process. Like, okay, well, we have a we have a scene, a part here where we can show some female nudity, like, you know, as you do in the 80s.
A little full frontal.
But then the scene is literally going to be Mahoney just standing there leering, drinking a beer. Like, he might as well have been jacking off.
he was adding that to the spank bank for later. Yes.
And then like, Harris comes up and doesn't even really scold him at all, or, like,
just gives him a look.
He just gives him a look, and he actually takes the beer. Like,
the most that Harris does here is, once more, Harris is pissed at Mahoney. And so he's lecturing him, and he's going to call Captain Reed to finally get Mahoney thrown out. At this moment, he sees Thompson outside, and that sexy 80s saxophone music plays, and Mahoney decides that, well, he wants to stay after all. So he gets on the phone with Captain Reed and says, "Captain, can I leave? No? Okay. Well, I tried." So Mahoney gets push-ups for his cheek to Harris, and Copeland uses his socks as incentive to get him to keep doing push-ups. And then we get a scene in the bathroom with Jones making razor sounds as he's shaving his face with a manual razor. Mahoney coming in from his push-ups. Tackleberry toughening up by, like, punching himself in the gut. And then Barbara comes in, and Tackleberry. So did you ever encounter people at your old security job where they're like, where they would legitimately be the type that would be like, "Come on, hit me.
I mean, I never encountered it personally, but there's a few people I can think of who I wouldn't be surprised if that's what
wouldn't
they did
put it past them
on their own time.
And so, yeah, he has Barbara to hit him, and instead of punching him in the gut, which is obviously what Tackleberry was expecting, he slaps him in the face. Now the cadets get weekend leave, so I don't even know how long they've been there at this point. We can assume a few weeks or something. Harris gets Blanks and Copeland to investigate because he wants to know what kind of hijinks they get up to while they've got their furlough. They use Barbara, and he checks with Mahoney, who kind of catches on to the situation because Barbara isn't too smooth about it. You know, where he says, "Hey, Mahoney, are you guys having a party this weekend? Yeah, you want to come? Oh, I can't. But where is it?" So Mahoney catches on and provides false information and ends up sending Blanks and Copeland to the Blue Oyster Bar, which, prank number 4 are we at now? Which is a gay bar filled with what I have to assume is the image of what gay meant in the 1980s. Like, they're basically like bikers, but like sexy bikers. Like, they're the biker from the Village People. Yeah, they're leather clad and they're a little seedy. So, you know, is this what they thought being gay meant in the 80s? Is that, or was this what it was in the 80s? You had to go to the underground club and put on your best leather
and dance salsa.
The tango. I apologize for being straight and not having that perspective for this particular scene, but I have to assume, just looking at it, that there's something problematic happening here. I just can't pinpoint what it is. So the real party is a beach bonfire party with Tackleberry playing sax, more gratuitous 80s tits, and we finally get to talk to Hightower a bit, 45 minutes in. He was a florist, which, of course, is hilarious. Let's have the 6'7" black man be a florist. Let's make fun of the gays in the previous scene, and then let's make it look like...
Have the ultra masculine guy do a really feminine job.
Very sissy, yeah, very sissy type job. I imagine sissy is a word that was used a lot. So Mahoney and Thompson excuse themselves to a secluded area to make out a little, and he asks her, "Why do you want to be a cop?" And she says, "I like to dress like a man." So, more misogynistic views. Monday morning, the cadets are taken to a shooting gallery town thing with shotguns. Harris asks Blanks and Copeland why he didn't get called. "What happened?" "Dancing. Just dancing," they say. Which, well, they weren't lying. And so in this shooting exercise, we see Hightower being good. We see Barbara being clumsy, and we see Tackleberry being a fucking lunatic. I do love Tackleberry. And
this scene of, well, the opening scene and this scene highly, like, emphasize what I'm talking about in security when I'm talking about a Tackleberry. Like, just that guy who just wants to, like, scrap.
Yeah.
Who just wants, who's just itching to, like, put somebody in handcuffs. Just itching to, like, lay the law down.
Oh, yeah. But I love Tackleberry. He's so much fun. Like, I imagine if you're working with someone like Tackleberry, it's not as cool as just watching someone that is just an absolute crazy person.
Like, the thing I love about that scene is how he, like, clearly has memorized, like, what's going to happen in the chorus.
Yeah.
But he just blows past all of it, goes behind the shooter, shoots the guy from in the back, kicks it down.
Yeah. Like, Tackleberry is so much better used in the sequels. But even in this, he's fun. Now, that evening, we see George Martin sneaking into the women's dorm room again. He knocks on the door, and surprise, it's Sergeant Callahan. How, like, is she waiting in someone else's room? Because when you look at the decor of the room, it looks like it's her room. It looks like, yeah, it's the kind of stuff that would be in her room.
So, and I mean, she then takes him to Pound Town, like, right in the room.
Very so. Much so, yeah. He tries to run, and we get this whole sir, ma'am scene going on. You know, yes, sir, call me ma'am. And she basically assaults him. And, like, when we see him walking across the lawn in the morning, like, it almost looks like he might have had a strap on up his ass. You know, like, the way he's walking. I don't think he knows what just happened. So now it's the assertive voice lesson where Hooks is bad, where Lieutenant Harris is, now this is the window and I'm the bad guy and I'm climbing out of the window, and Hooks is, this is a stick up. And of course Tackleberry is a lunatic. You know, drop the goddamn TV before I blow your goddamn brains out, or whatever he says. So later, George is talking to Mahoney about being in love with just one woman. And Mahoney's like, oh, that's got to be terrible. And this is where Mahoney finds out that George's accent is fake. He's actually not George Martin. He's just plain old George Martin.
Writer of Game of Thrones.
Yeah, and I'm just kind of like, oh my god, like, what a... That took me a few seconds to process, and now I've got this mental image of George Martin in my head, because I just watched the Family Guy episode last night that has George Martin in it, where they make fun of his sailor hat and how he gets, like, all the nerd gash or whatever. Oh boy. That just shows that Mahoney isn't the only creep when it comes to women in this movie. Blanks and Copeland try to prank Barbara for the false intel. Their plan is to get a hooker to put in his room during inspection. And the hooker is played by Georgina Spelvin, whose IMDb is an interesting one. Everything before Police Academy is porn.
I was gonna guess that.
Then she tried to legitimize her career and then ended up back in porn. I did a little extra research and watched one of her old movies called Central Encounters of Every Kind. It was pretty good. At least the 3.5 minutes that I watched was pretty good.
There's a joke I want to make, but
that's the joke I was setting you up for, man.
Yeah, I'm not sure what kind of show we're running here.
So Mahoney to the rescue.
Your kid just told me he listens to the podcast.
No, he only listened to the theme song. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. No, I won't let him listen to the podcast. Not yet. When I will let him listen to some of the, or watch some of the movies that we talk about on the podcast, because I still won't even let him watch any of the movies we've covered so far, even the ones that are supposed to be for kids. So we've got Mahoney to the rescue. He ends up taking the hooker away and hiding inside a podium. And I, this is a scene I definitely didn't understand as a kid. So it turns out that while they're hiding in this podium, Commandant Lassard is about to give a speech at that podium. And so Mahoney has to hide inside with the hooker. When Lassard steps up to the podium, the hooker does what she was hired to do and starts blowing him. And we get hilarious faces and reaction from Commandant Lassard as he tries to give his speech and slideshow. I love Commandant Lassard.
Right? Yeah, I thought this was like the funniest scene.
This is definitely up there.
At least in the top three.
Yeah. And just the very, very good. I've always loved how Lassard delivers his lines in these movies. And so, of course, at the end of it, when his slideshow is over, there is the plucky misunderstanding that Mahoney was the person who sucked him off. Good speech is what he says to that. Commandant Lassard goes back to his office where Harris is and tells him that Mahoney has done a very, very bad thing. And Harris asks, to whom? And he says, to whom? I have no idea. So now we get the next montage, which is the They're Getting Better montage, which moves on to ride-alongs where Mahoney gets stuck with Harris. Tackleberry is shooting a cat out of a tree. Hooks is trying to direct traffic. And finally, Harris, to try to get some traffic moving, he ends up commandeering a motorbike and crashing and ending up flying into a horse's ass. I like Mahoney's line, someone call a veterinarian. Oh man, Mahoney. And even though Mahoney says he's told no one when they're back at the academy, we get everyone trying to keep their shit together, trying very hard to not to laugh, and of course Jones doing the making a horse sound. Oh, and the fart sound, of course. So, 2:30 in the morning, Hightower wakes Mahoney up to get a refresher on how to drive because he hasn't done it since he was 12. 12? I love that the last time Hightower did drive, he wasn't old enough to drive. And I do also, with us doing Short Circuit recently, and drawing all these parallels between Mahoney and Harris and the characters in that movie, I do appreciate that Newton Crosby was a terrible driver, but in this movie, he's the one that has to teach Hightower how to drive. He has to pass the test or he's going to get kicked out. Mahoney decides, okay, let's go. And I quote, sleeping is for fags. He says that so under his breath, but it's just like, oh, come on, Mahoney. I was beginning to really like you, even though you're a pig and all that sort of thing. But it is 1984, and as we've discussed many times, language like this, we unfortunately have to kind of give it the benefit of the decade. So they steal Copeland's car, which you may notice had a Confederate flag vanity plate on the front. So of course, the racist characters that they shave their heads to make them look even more racist, you know, well, it's just confirmed here with their Confederate flag vanity plate. Hightower has to tear the front seats out to have leg room. I was joking about that, says Mahoney. Hightower is terrible at first, doesn't even know how to turn off the wipers. He rear-ends someone because Mahoney didn't tell him to stop. The guy he rear-ends goes to yell at him and then sees him and backs down. I think I'd be pretty terrified if I came up to a little Honda Civic and the guy driving was sitting in the back seat. I'd probably be like, you know what? It's cool. We're good. We're good. So then now all of a sudden, Hightower is amazing. He's out running cops. And then the scene switches to the real test, and he does great. And now Hooks does it, and she's casually and playfully doing it. She's singing. I like when she goes through the water sprinkler, waterfall, whatever it is. And she like squeals when she does that. Like she's having so much fun. And then at the end, she runs over Copeland's feet. And then he calls her a dumb fat. Now, for any of our listeners that haven't been to our website, I'm a white guy. Colin's a black guy. I don't know if you've seen our pictures on any of our social medias. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this word. I don't know where it falls in the whole range of whether it's as bad as the N-word.
I mean, it's not great. It's not a great word.
Yeah, see, I didn't even know this slur existed. So there is a very problematic word that, I mean, it's kind of like in Clerks 2 when Kevin Smith started trying to bring Porch Monkey back in that one, which is another one that it's like, I didn't know this word existed. So anyway, this terrible thing from Copeland is said. I guess the only solace is that it isn't the worst word, no. Maybe. So he says this word, and of course Hightower is the one that comes to Hooks' rescue and ends up flipping a car. Like, I do like that at least when Bubba Smith is doing something like this and flipping the car, that it actually looks like he is putting real effort into it. He does make it look realistic, but of course he gets thrown out of the academy instantly for this, even though it should probably have been Copeland or...
I do also like that Hightower is constantly just like it's not like they let anything slide, and it's not like he necessarily beats anybody up, but he anytime like something racist is said, he's sure to, like, make a statement.
Yeah, yeah, he makes sure that they know what they said was wrong. But yeah, it should have been the other guy that got, well, I guess probably both of them should have gotten kicked out.
Yeah.
Later on, Copeland finds his car all wrecked. He confronts Mahomo in the cafeteria. yep, they just keep coming. And Barbara comes to the rescue. So, from the most unlikely of places, by hitting him in the face with a
foreign object.
With a tray. So, when they're confronted by Harris, you know, and asked who started it, they say Barbara. This is where we double down on, then he and his queer dog are out of here. Oh, boy. I apologize to all our listeners now, and especially to anyone that feels like they want to take, like, isolate some sound clips out of this movie. We do not condone this language. It's just of its time. Oh boy. So Mahoney takes the blame instead to save Barbara, to get himself thrown out, and he finally succeeds in getting himself thrown out, which Harris does with great pleasure. Fackler, the nerdy guy that we haven't talked about a whole bunch, the clumsy bumbling fool, he's on a ride along. And we see that he accidentally starts a riot by throwing an apple and hitting some guy with it, which makes them think that someone else that happens to be carrying apples is the person that threw it, and it starts a fight. And so, yeah, he starts a riot.
It's like a, what do you call it, Rube Goldberg type situation. Where it's guy gets thrown through the window, which hits another guy who knocks I think it's like a pinball or an arcade game into the street, yeah. Which causes a car accident.
Yep.
Which causes a biker to, like, crash through this, like, food booth, which causes a guy to, like, leave his TV with some homeless guys so he can go help, which causes the homeless guy to steal the TV, which is just like...
Yeah. So the cadets are sent as backup to assist in their riot gear. Mahoney, who hasn't left yet, has an attack of conscience and he joins them. They end up in the wrong spot and are too close to the action. It's a pretty mellow riot, though, all things considered. Like, with all those things that you just mentioned, you'd think that, oh my god, this is chaos, but it's, like, very well choreographed, and no one looks like they're actually allowed to inflict any damage on any of the nearby buildings or something. You know, okay, we're gonna have this riot, but we're not gonna break anything. Commandant Lessard comes to inspect personally. Jones has to use machine gun sound effects over the PA to disperse the crowd. Hightower is in his flower shop, so he got his job back at least, which happens to be along the riot route. Blanks and Copeland get their guns taken away by a guy they were trying to intimidate through a chain link fence, and before they run out of fence. And I guess these are now the only two guns in this riot? Because this guy, the main bad guy, that's his actual character name, takes the guns from them, and they end up hiding in the Blue Oyster. So, of course, that's hilarious callback. This main bad guy is played by Doug Lennox, and this is where I want to take a little break and do a special segment. Doug Lennox was the last actor I was going to introduce in this movie, and now I want to take a break for a special Police Academy in memoriam, because I noticed going through my research that a high percentage of the main cast from Police Academy are now dead. So here we go. Doug Lennox, playing main bad guy, was born January 21st, 1938, and died November 28th, 2015 at the age of 77, peacefully in his sleep. Joyce Gordon, who played Mrs. Thompson, was born August 28th, 1934, and died August 13th, 2008, at the age of 73. I couldn't find the cause on that one. Ted Ross, Captain Reed, was born June 30th, 1934, and died September 3rd, 2002, at the age of 68. He had a stroke in 1998 and died 4 years later from complications. Andrew Rubin, who played George Martin, was born June 22nd, 1946, and died October 15th, 2015, at the age of 69 from lung cancer. Bubba Smith played Hightower.
I didn't realize George Martin was that old.
Yeah. Bubba Smith, who played Hightower, was born February 28, 1945, and died August 3, 2011, at age 66. The 6'7" Bubba had an enlarged heart and 75% blockage of some blood vessels, but ultimately died of acute drug intoxication from phentermine, which is a weight loss drug. David Graff, Tackleberry, was born April 16, 1950, died April 7, 2001 at age 50 of a heart attack at his brother-in-law's wedding. That's bad luck right there. That's your sign from God that you're not supposed to marry this woman. is if your brother-in-law drops dead at the wedding. And finally, this is probably the least surprising, George Gaines, who played Commandant Lessard, was born May 3rd, 1917, died February 15th, 2016. Wow. He outlived everyone that I've mentioned so far, and his cause of death was being fucking 98 years old, man. like good for him. Like, I would have liked to have seen a movie come out in like 2015 starring like him and Betty White. You know, like, so anyway, sorry, this is in memoriam. I hate to crack jokes, but rest in peace, Police Academy actors. Okay, so Riot. Barbara is being chased. Where are you, Barbara? Passing you now, sir, is what's happening with Harris. Harris is taken hostage by the guy with the gun. Fackler changes clothes to blend in. Barbara encounters the guys that threw him off the bridge in the beginning, and he kicks their asses, even though they're moving, not looting. They just happen to be moving during a riot. I do love that Leslie gets his revenge, and then as he's walking away, he's got this like holy shit look on his face, because he's like, yeah, let that be a lesson to you. But as he's walking away, he realizes, whoops. So Thompson and Callahan are wondering where Harris is, and then that's when the guy, the only guy with the gun, fires at them, and he manages to keep Thompson trapped behind a crate. And so Mahoney to the rescue. Mahoney gets up on the roof. He finds Harris, and he has to give up his weapon to save him. When he asks, you know, any advice here, Lieutenant?
I just want to point out, like, Mahoney's police training in that scene has obviously failed him, like, so bad. Like, the guy, he has, like, a split second where the guy hasn't even noticed he's there.
Yeah.
There's not a big gap. He could have got it.
Yeah, he could have gotten them. So they're up on the roof, and then we get plainclothes Hightower to the rescue. The hero of this film is Hightower. I just want to watch you off these pigs, is what he says to the guy. And that distracts the guy long enough. So like what you just said about Mahoney, he just said one thing which distracts the guy long enough to punch him down the stairs. And then we get Hooks, who, don't move, dirtbag. She finally gets her voice. And I just want to say that during this scene, just for shits and giggles, for shiggles, as you will, I decided to count gunshots. So
I was going to ask, because those are six shooters.
Those are six shooters. See, that's what I said here, or that's what I was thinking, is they look like six shooter. So this guy fires 16 bullets. So now, at you know, when he's shooting those, he has the Copeland and Blanks' guns.
Yeah.
So he's got 12 there, and he ends up getting Mahoney's, but I don't think he fires any of Mahoney's shots. So he, but even if you factor in Mahoney's gun, he's got two rounds left. So I don't know. Maybe he had more guns hidden. But when Hightower hands the guns back to the Harris, he says, "They look like cadet revolvers to me." I also noticed that they're fully loaded. You can actually see the chambers all have bullets in them. So essentially he fired off no bullets from these cadet guns. So Tackleberry is disappointed that he missed out on all the gunplay. And it's graduation day now, and we're getting some loose ends tied up. Barbara is getting hugged by his mom, but Tackleberry is worrying that this lady is bothering him. George and Callahan seem to be an item now, but it's still a very yes, ma'am relationship. Mahoney and Thompson are making out, and Lessard says, "You men, stop that." "Oh, it's you, Mahoney. That's better." So, I'm not sure whether that's better is a callback to the podium scene, or whether it's, oh, okay, it's not two guys making out. So, like, I don't know whether this is a homophobic joke, or, well, I guess they're both homophobic jokes. I don't know in which way this is a homophobic joke.
Yeah.
We get an award ceremony at this graduation day, and Mahoney and Hightower are getting special medals for bravery. They are asked to make speeches. Hightower gets up there to make his speech, says, "Thanks." And then, of course, Mahoney starts a long-winded one where he's thanking the chief, the mayor, the president, His Holiness the Pope, King of Norway, and other esteemed guests. And this is when we hear a zipper get undone, and Mahoney gets a look on his face because the hooker is back, and we get the credits. And the credits are over, everybody marching, and the Police Academy song, which, out of everything Police Academy I remember from my childhood, this theme song. Movies these days, they don't make catchy theme songs anymore. I mean, I know the Superman theme, the Indiana Jones theme, and
Ghostbusters.
Well, but I just
Jurassic Park.
Yeah, see, I'm talking more of the instrumental.
All the
themes.
John Williams.
Basically. And you look at movies like The Avengers, and you'd recognize the Avengers theme if you heard it, but if I asked you to whistle it right now, you probably wouldn't be able to.
Oh, I could.
Oh, could you? Okay. they're not as catchy as some of these ones were back then. And like the Police Academy theme is one that's just always do 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 do.
I find now it's more about style. It's like, you know when it's a Hans Zimmer.
Yeah.
You know when it's like, well, he's really the only one. It's like,
well, Danny Elfman. You know when it's a Danny Elfman.
Yeah, you know when it's Danny Elfman. You know, and it's John Williams. Those three, the rest are all kind of like,
yeah,
they're just aping those guys. So.
Well, and I remember that it was a long time, like, before I realized that Danny Elfman was the composer of The Simpsons, that I made the connection with other Danny Elfman stuff.
Yeah,
because he does have a very distinct sound, and for all those years, I didn't realize that The Simpsons was. It was probably around season 10, season 12 that I kind of went, oh, I can hear Danny Elfman in the Simpsons theme. But that's Police Academy. Now, Colin on IMDb, it scored 6.7 out of 10, and it had a Metascore of 41. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has a 54% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 64%. But those are just numbers. Now tell me, what did people have to say about this movie?
Alright, so I'm just gonna, like, my impression of Police Academy was that people, like, this movie was a resounding success. People around the world loved it, and it was, like, I would have expected it to be, like, high 80s, like, in the 90 range.
With six sequels, there's gotta be a reason for that.
Especially given that there were so many sequels. But reading some of the reviews from the time, it seems like this movie might have more of, like, a cult following.
Oh, it was panned hard, eh?
Yeah, like, it didn't seem like people actually liked it all that much. So Roger Ebert said, it's really something. It's so bad, maybe you should pool your money and draw straws and send one of the guys off to rent it so that in the future, whenever you think you're sitting through a bad comedy, he could shake his head and chuckle tolerantly and explain that you don't know what bad is. Variety says, Police Academy at its core is a harmless, innocent poke at authority that does find a fresh background in a police academy. Women in films such as Kim Cattrall as an Ivy League type and Leslie Easterbrook as a busty sergeant have almost nothing to do.
That's true.
Washington Post said, they loved it at the Washington Post. They said, Police Academy is the most uproarious film to come along in years. You have the right to remain silent, but you can't help but laugh out loud. And then the last one is a user review on Rotten Tomatoes from April 24th, 2020. So,
oh, very recent. Okay.
Yeah. So somebody was obviously, you know,
watching it during the apocalypse. Yeah, watching Police Academy,
looking for something to raise their spirits during the pandemic, but they didn't find it in Police Academy because their review said, "This isn't a comedy. It's ... It's nothing."
Right on. There's the critics. So, yeah, 6.7, 54%, 64%, 41%. Where does this fall for you? Would it be better to qualify it with, if there weren't so many offensive language moments in this movie?
I'm trying to put it into the context of the time it came out.
Yeah.
And I mean, overall, just watching it, for me, I would say, like, there was points that I laughed, and I thought it was, like most 80s films, it's just so basic and mindless that you kind of can't help but like it somewhat, because it's just, like, a fun movie to watch.
Yeah.
I'd give it probably, like, a 60%.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, see, and I'll say that for me, that I went down a Police Academy rabbit hole because that could have been my review. I think I watched this back in April, mm-hmm. where I was looking for something to lift my spirits, just like you said. And I ended up going through all seven of the movies.
Yeah.
So now I realized after watching all of them, I've never actually seen the seventh movie.
Okay.
So that was the first time.
When did that one come out? Like, is it in the 2000s?
I almost want to say it was in the 2000s. Yeah, it was Mission to Moscow. Oh, I don't know. But it was terrible.
Okay.
They get progressively worse. And it's kind of as they lose people. So the first four, they all have Mahoney in them. And they are all much better. And I did notice that as I watched them all, so it's tough to think of this movie alone because this movie isn't quite as good as the second or third or fourth one.
Okay.
Right? Like I found it's those ones
all,
more.
This one's all set up.
Yeah.
So it's like by the time when you get to the sequels, everything's established.
It's the origin story one. Like you do learn more people, but there's more time for just fun in the other movies. I was probably leaning towards 60% as well. You know, it was still a lot of fun to me. And as far as these stupid 80s comedies go, it's more refreshing than some of the spoof comedies and everything like that. It's
like, for me,
it's
think
a little more timeless than the spoof comedies as well, which are all usually pop culture jokes of the time.
That's what I was kind of thinking while I was watching it. For me, the most interesting thing about it is that I view Police Academy, even though I've never watched it, as being like, it is like the capstone of the comedy of that era.
Yeah.
And so to compare it to, like, you know, the movie, like, what was funny, like, that when I was really into me, like, the Superbad, like, the Seth Rogen,
yeah,
those
yeah.
types of guys, like,
yeah,
now.
Judd Apatow.
Yeah, now I don't know, like, what are the big comedies right now? Or even, like, The Hangover. Like, the movies, like, those types of movies that you think about as, like, you know, the best comedies of our current time.
Yeah.
And it's just such a different sensibility. It's so pranky and jokey and
yeah,
and like slapstick humor and that kind of stuff. It's just interesting, I guess, how comedy tastes have changed.
Yeah, I feel like in the 80s it was kind of, you had your, in the same way that you referenced Judd Apatow or Todd Phillips or anybody that are making certain types of movies. This one, it feels like in the 80s you had John Hughes movies or you had Police Academy type movies.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those seem like kind of the two categories that they... Well, and then I guess the third one would be like the Saturday Night Live guy type movies. Like any of the movies that had... I know John Candy wasn't... Police Academy, but still, like, you know, John Candy movies or Bill Murray movies or Dan Aykroyd movies, Chevy Chase, you know, so you'd have those. So maybe there were the three types of comedies in the 80s.
Because it's interesting because this, like, a lot of these guys were from SNL, right?
No, none of them.
Oh.
Yeah, with Saturday Night Live, there was no one from Saturday Night Live. The closest was Fackler. He was in that show Fridays, which was a show that came out to try to compete with Saturday Night Live, which was the same sort of format, but it didn't do well. It obviously didn't last 40 years.
I've never heard of it, so
yeah.
I'm completely wrong. I was going to say, like, you have that type of 80s humor, and then as you move in the 90s, you have, like, those SNL guys like Chris Farley and Adam Sandler.
Yeah.
And it's this, like, loud, obnoxious humor. And then it's just, it's interesting how things change as it goes along. Because now I'd say comedy is, like, a lot more subtle. It's, like, a lot more, like, very much in the writing.
Or it's scary movie.
Or it's scary movie. Or it's parodies,
Well, that's Police Academy, and that's our show for this week. If you like that show, one thing you could do that would really help us out is to go on Apple or Stitcher or whatever app you listen to your podcasts on and give us 5 stars. It doesn't really matter what you say. You could say Police Academy is full of problematic language. The important thing is to give us those 5 stars and help drive us up the charts and help us get noticed.
And if you want to get in touch with us, if you want to send us an email, tell us you like the show, tell us you hate the show, tell us you want to collab, as the kids say these days, you can reach us at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. You can also check out our website. There you'll find links to the podcast, links to all our social media. Social media will be the best place to go if you want to find out what we're watching so that you can watch it as well. And then come on in and join in on the fun.
And of course, on top of giving us 5 stars, one of the things you can do that really help a podcast are share it. Tell your friends, you know, post our stuff on your own social medias. Help get us noticed. And of course, if you want to be a bigger hero, if you want to help us out financially even and help make our show sound better, become a producer of the show, you can go to patreon.com/iusedtolikethisone and you can become part of the I Used to Like This One Patreon community. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thank you for listening and join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.